I was sort of told to bring a dose of reality to the workshop, to talk about an observations of Hurricane Elena, which I did my PhD thesis on, and to sort of show people who are more into modeling and mathematics what the intensity change and structural changes of an actual hurricane look like. So just based on my title, you might ask, why is she studying a hurricane that happened in 1985? Why not one that happened, more recently than 20 years ago? And the answer to that is, until relatively recently, the last 3 to 5 years, the Hurricane Elena data set was actually one of the best that had been collected. We have an unprecedented radar and aircraft data set here, collected over a 56-hour period over which this time that Elena underwent significant change in structure and intensity. So the idea is to use this data set to provide a more complete picture of the way the structural changes and intensity changes that a real hurricane undergoes. So what is this data? How much data are we talking about here? So in Elena, we had about 1,200 ground-based radar scans. This was the old WSR 57 radar that was collected in Apalachicola, Florida. I'll show you where that is in a minute. And why we were able to capture such a long period of time. And these scans have time resolution is finite, it's 23 seconds. But what I did here is interpolate the radar to every 5 minutes, and this radar actually has 750 meter resolution, so extremely high resolution when compared to sort of numerical models of hurricanes still. We also have 86 radial flight legs. So these are flight legs that are directed from the outer regions of the hurricane in towards the eye along the radial leg. And these basically provide sort of cross sections of temperature, dew point, winds, humidity, wind speed, and direction. And in Elena, it was flown at 850 millibars. And these have about half kilometer resolution. So again, pretty high resolution when compared to models. Another feature of the data set is 47 vertically pointing radar scans. So these are going to be in the RZ plane and will give us a view of vertical motion and reflectivity sort of along these radial paths into the hurricane core. All right, so what did I do with all of this data? So basically, this large data set sort of allowed me to look at three separate but interrelated topics that are really important in tropical cyclone development that we're still sort of wrestling with today. The first one is the evolution of the symmetric storm structure. So here we're talking about, just if we average around the storm and look at sort of the symmetric structure, where hurricanes to a large degree are symmetric, so we can look at sort of what's happening there. The second thing is we can look at the distribution of convection and of kinematic and thermodynamic variables with the direction, respect to the direction of environmental wind shear. And as sort of Carrie touched on yesterday, that environmental wind shear is one of the things that inhibits the strengthening of tropical cyclones and actually causes a lot of asymmetries to develop. So we can look at sort of what those look like as well here. And the third is sort of the realization of intercore asymmetries, instabilities, and the existence of vortex frosty waves, which is sort of a lot packed into one statement there. But I think one more interesting thing about this research. So today, I will talk about the first and third things, sort of use the first as a jumping off point to talk about the asymmetries, which is the part that sort of I find most interesting that came out of this research. So to give a little background first about Elena, I'll use the old-fashioned pointer. What we have here is a portion of Elena's track here in the Gulf of Mexico. Here's Florida. Here's the Apalachicola radar that I mentioned before. This is just a portion of Elena's track. It's going to match the time period we have data for. Elena actually came up here through just north of Cuba and then made this crazy loop here, which I'll talk about in a second, off the coast of Florida. And in the bottom right, we have the best track, minimum surface pressure in blue, and then the maximum 10-meter wind speed in red here. So what's sort of unique about Elena is that it did make this slow anticyclonic loop off the coast of Florida, which allowed numerous flights and almost continuous data coverage from the NOAA aircraft and also from this Apalachicola radar. And there were three sort of distinct periods of intensification or intensity change in Elena that I'll talk about today. The first is on the 31st of August, 1985, when Elena was fairly steady or slowly deepening here as it moved towards the coast of Florida. And Elena was being steered by a mid-latitude trough at this time. Was undergoing a bit strong shear, about 10 meters per second, which was causing the storm not to intensify, even though it was over pretty warm waters. This trough actually got close enough to Elena that there was a constructive interference. Elena was actually a lot of convection at the time and actually eroded the trough that was affecting the storm. And as sort of the steering flow and the winds collapsed over the storm, it underwent this anticyclonic loop here in the Gulf of Mexico and then started to move back towards the west as easterly flow was established back over the center. Sort of as the shear dropped and the trough sort of eroded over the storm, it underwent this period of rapid intensification for about 18 hours and then sort of leveled off and weakened through landfall on the Gulf coastline here. So we sort of broke it down into three broad periods of steady intensity, rapid intensification, and weakening here. So I'll show you sort of what some of the structure looks like in those three time periods. So what the next three plots are gonna show are the average reflectivities, just averaged in time. On the left-hand side, you'll have an AQQ, or Apalachicola radar image. The center of the storm here is obviously marked with the hurricane symbol, or the tropical storm symbol in this case. And the outer region is 150 kilometers from the center. In the bottom right, this will be one of those radius height cross sections that I mentioned before. So we have radius and height here. And you can imagine that this plot is sort of like if you just took any number of radials around the storm, sort of in the RC plane and averaged them, you would get a structure that looks something like this. Don't worry too much about this sort of weird labeling here in the bottom. Just keep in mind that this zero is basically the inner edge of the eyewall. It's actually the radius of maximum updraft in the hurricane is what this is actually going to turn out to be. So if we look at Elena during this time, when it was steady or just starting to intensify, you can see this doesn't look very impressive. It doesn't look like a Category 2 hurricane, which is what Elena was at this time. You can see that there is some clearing in the eye, but no really strong reflectivity regions in the eye wall. You can see that maybe you're starting to get a rain band here to wrap in around the core. There's a lot of empty space. There's a lot of really regions of low reflectivity around the core. You can also see that there's a lot of low clouds inside sort of this inner edge of the eye wall. No really deep penetrating updrafts, no tall sort of thunderstorm clouds this time. And the maximum reflectivity you can see is here, sort of in the bright band region.
Oh, Kristen, this is a snapshot of time, right?
It's an average.
Oh, it is?
Yes, over, yes, sorry. I should have, it's over about, okay. I guess, a 7-hour period.
Thanks. Yeah.
Can you say what the shear looked like?
The shear at this time was from the north, sort of the west-northwest, averaged about 10 meters per second at this time.
And how, for the non-experts, how big a loft, I mean, what was the height of the shear?
The shear in this case is calculated between 850 and 200 millibars, so we're talking about, you know, about 8 to 10 kilometers deep in the atmosphere.
Okay.
And in this case, most of the shear is coming from that trough from the west, so it's mostly, most of the shear is coming in the upper layers in the atmosphere in this case. All right, so we want to compare this to a snapshot of what was going on during the rapid intensification. You're going to see a dramatic change.
A dumb question. How long does it take air parcels to complete a circuit around the storm?
In this case, Elena had winds of about 30 meters per second at this time. So, depending on what radius.
I'll calculate that while you're going.
Yeah. So, maybe about an hour near the radius of maximum winds at this time?
Yeah.
You do
so
that.
You have many cycles, so that's really a persistent asymmetry.
Yes. This asymmetry was actually pretty persistent during this time. All right, so now if I just toggle back and forth, you can see a distinct difference in what's going on now heading in towards max intensity and rapid intensity change. And you can see something that looks a little bit more classic, some images that Carrie showed us yesterday, especially here in the radio cross section. But first to the Apalachicola radar image at this time, you can see between the two time periods that now we have very distinct eye wall, even though it's very asymmetric at this time, which is a result of the vertical wind shear, which in this case, again, as I mentioned, is from the west-northwest. Talk a little bit about shear effects in a minute, but the shear effect is creating this large asymmetry in the amount of convection, both in the eye wall and sort of in these connecting bands, and then there's actually a spiral rain band that connects out this way. You can also see some evidence of some interesting sort of spiral rain band features here in the time composite that I'll mention later. In terms of the radial cross-section here, you can see that now this 0 point makes a little bit more sense why I pointed that out before, that this now is actually the inner edge of the eyewall, and what this translates to is the radius of maximum updraft in the eyewall at this time. The slope here of the eyewall is actually a little bit deceiving, because we only have about 60, or we have about 60 kilometers here and only about 15 in the vertical. The slope here is about 30 degrees, and this upper slope is about 45 degrees at this time. But you can see the deep sort of thunderstorm cloud here on the inner edge of the eyewall, also some deep convection out here, sort of representing those inner ray bands. The bright band is pretty obvious at this time, and we have about 40 to 45 degrees down near the surface. So the last time period, the weakening time period, will also look a little bit different, especially again in this period here with this sort of collapsing of the deep convection. So here again is the radar composite over about 6 or 7 hours. You can see between the last period that Elena has actually become even more symmetric. Sort of this low reflectivity region is penetrating even further around the storm from its sort of up shear, it's wrapped around the storm. We still have this highly asymmetric eyewall with all the deep convection to the north and northwest of the center. That's all I want to say about that, except for the fact that you can see the eye is starting to fill with low clouds again from its pretty clear representation during the maximum intensity. Here in the bottom panel.
Is this, this diameter is the same distance as this?
No, it's not. This is only going out to about 40 or 50 kilometers, and this is 150 kilometers. So 50 kilometers is going to be somewhere right in here. So we're only looking at really the inner core in this case.
So, so this high reflectivity here, that's just heavy precip.
Right. This is heavy precip. This is pretty much the eyewall precip we're looking at sort of right here. You can imagine that the maximum updraft is actually located at the 0 point, so the maximum precip is falling out sort of slightly.
Is it typical for the maximum reflectivity region, you know, turn counterclockwise when it goes from intensifying to the weakening?
That's a more reflection of a slight change in the direction of vertical wind shear. In these cases, the maximum reflectivity in the eyewall is generally left of the vertical wind shear vector, because updrafts are initiated generally in down shear or slightly left of down shear. And what happened between these two time periods is the direction of vertical wind shear actually slightly rotated. So that's why you see sort of this rotation of the maximum reflectivity around further in the storm between these two time periods. And the shear actually increased a little bit as well, which is why we have this persistent sort of drying that's being wrapped around the storm in this case.
It's interesting, Christine, that if you look at the contour of the minimum detectable reflectivity, it only goes up to about 13.5 kilometers, whereas before it went to 15.
Right.
So it's also shallower now.
Right, exactly. And the slope has actually increased significantly. The slope here, if you sort of measure the slope of the 10 dBz contour, it's increased to about 70 degrees. You can imagine that you still have some pretty active convection in the lower eyewall. The slope hasn't changed so much. But actually what's happening in this case that we've looked at is that you have the updraft coming out and then it turns right back out. You actually have a jet just right above the boundary layer so that the convection isn't actually penetrating. It's actually coming up and turning back out. So you have this huge slant.
You say right above the boundary layer, but that's 4.5 kilometers.
True.
Freezing level.
True. Yeah, it's sort of right below. It's almost collocated with the bright band. So now that's sort of the reflectivity structure, how that evolved in time, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. But right now we're going to switch over just looking at sort of the changes in the symmetric structure from the reconnaissance aircraft data. So the next two plots that I'm going to show you are basically radius time hog molars of as mutually average variables. So this first one is going to be of 850 millibar tangential winds. So time is going to be going down and radius out. So now we're looking at the full 150 kilometers here from the center. These dark blue bands are going to be missing, and then the contour scale here is in meters per second. So as I mentioned earlier, on the 31st, which is this top part of the diagram, Elena was nearly steady or sort of fluctuating in intensity. Now I should mention that this dark line here is the radius of maximum winds in this case. So on the 31st, the radius of maximum winds was sort of fluctuating around 70 or 75 kilometers from the center, not a lot of changes in intensity. Early on the first, as Elena started to rapidly intensify, we'll see in a minute that that's really when convection became concentrated in the eye wall, as I sort of showed in those vertical cross sections before, that we had rapid spin up of the tendential winds on the inner edge of what was going to become the eye wall. And the radius of maximum winds actually, I sort of had this dashed here, the radius of maximum winds actually didn't jump in 30 kilometers in a matter of 4 hours or so here. The radius of maximum wind actually redeveloped on the inner edge of the eye wall in response to this rapid spin up of the tendential winds. And sort of once this convection was developed, see on the eye wall, that sort of the intensity progressed from this point sort of in a classic sort of symmetric sort of ring of sort of inward propagating at this time. And then we had this period of no data, which is a little disconcerting. There's probably some really interesting things going on at this time. And then as we go on to the second, you can see the maximum winds at 850 are actually during this time period. And the best track actually shows Elena to be weakening at this period.
I have a question connected with Mike's comments. So I asked Mike before when he was talking about mesovortices. He said there are always mesovortices. Right now, you're going to give us some evidence for mesovortices?
I'm going to talk about the symmetric part, and then I'm going to talk about the asymmetric part. So.
And that'll have mesovortices.
Yes, you're going to see. Well, what we think are mesovortices. In this data set, since we're looking at radar.
I know, that's right. What I was.
So. But I'll show you some strong evidence that they were there. And that evidence starts with this plot here. So this is the radius time plot of as mutually averaged vorticity in the storm. So again, on the 31st, not a lot of action. No strong radial gradients of vorticity. The maximum is somewhere here in the core, but nothing really thrilling going on. Again, as intensity started, or rapid intensity change sort of started here early on the 1st, a weak maximum developed pretty much on the really close to the center of the storm. And this maximum sort of moved slowly inward with time and then died out as we reached midday on the 1st.
Zero, just for clarification, is zero now on the radial axis, it's still the updraft?
No, this zero is true radius.
Okay.
So this is the eye, and then as you can tell, this is going to be the eye wall in here. So as sort of the tangential winds was spinning up here on the inner edge of the eye wall, you can see that our vorticity maximum redeveloped and became anchored sort of on that inner edge of the eye wall and started to really rapidly intensify here over this 7 or 8 hour period. And what we had developed is a sort of a profile like Mike had drawn yesterday, where we have low values in the eye, a maximum in the eye wall, low values out here, and then actually, low values here, and then another maximum out here, which will be important in a second. And then sort of after this missing time period, you can see that vorticity values have actually increased in the core, which again might be evidence of mesovortices mixing. I'll show you some evidence of that. But the maximum is still out here in the eye wall.
So I have a question. How common is it to see this sort of annulus of vorticity associated with intensification? Do you have an idea?
I would say all the time.
Yeah.
This is typical. Sort of this structure, a monopole with the maximum vorticity in the core, is more common during, I'm not even going to say that. It may not be more common during sort of tropical storm formation, but when you have this sort of rapid spin up in a hurricane, this is
how it goes.
This is how it goes. One of my students has actually done a composite of this, and this is pretty common. This is it. All right, so now I'm going to try to put together the reflectivity structure with the aircraft data. So now what we're looking at again is a radius time model. So time is now going down here. We're looking at a shorter time period than what we were actually looking in the last couple of figures. We don't have radar data for the whole time. And we're again looking at true radius. So superimposed on this azimuthal average now of reflectivity is the radius and maximum winds in the black and the radius and maximum vorticity here in the white. So these I just pulled off the last couple of images. So sort of as I mentioned earlier, on the 31st, which is just at the top of the plot, the radius of maximum winds was out here at, say, 70 kilometers with the maximum reflectivity. As the maximum reflectivity actually shifted to what's going to become the inner edge of the eye wall, this is when the radius of maximum winds actually did that jump inward. And here you can see here's the radius of maximum vorticity that had that weak maximum in the eye. And then actually jumped outward to become located, sort of anchored on what's going to become the inner edge of the eye wall, the rest of the intensity change. So you can sort of see some of the things that Mike was talking yesterday, that you have all these bumps and wiggles on the inner edge of the eye wall, some of these smaller scale asymmetries that he spoke about. And then you can see them down here as well. So sort of as Elena was intensifying during this time period, that's when that sort of ring of vorticity was developing in the core. And you can see that as we come along here into midday on the 1st, that you have a rather smooth eye wall, a nice clear eye. You see some really interesting outward propagating features throughout the period. But it's sort of this time period, after about 15Z on the 1st, that I want to talk about for the rest of the talk. So I'm going to blow that section up here. So this is just the bottom section of that plot I just showed you. And it's sort of the transition from this clear eye to, you can see some reflectivity values of about 5 to 10 dBZ showing up in the eye, and a rather smooth inner edge of the eye wall transitioning to this very bumpy and irregular shape. And then you can also see these sort of outward propagating features that seem to be emanating from the eye wall convection, and also another feature in here. So what was going on during this time period? Why did we go from this nice sort of classic picture of a hurricane to some really interesting structure in through here? So this picture here was an azimuthal average, so it doesn't tell us anything about really the interesting asymmetric structure that was going on. So if we just take the what the actual whole reflectivity picture looked like at here at 1640, so right when sort of this all this interesting action was starting to occur, this is actually what the picture looks like. So you can see the azimuthal average doesn't tell us a lot about all this really interesting structure that's going on here. So what do we have in this time period? The things that sort of stand out are this cloudy eye. You can see we have a distinct elliptical eye wall and an asymmetric eye wall at this time, where we have deep convection here to the north and almost an open eye wall to the south. You can see all these really very interesting banded structures that are showing up. Again, this is 50 kilometers. This is so when I saw this image, at the time I had been reading stuff, some of Mike's work and Wayne's previous work, and the things that sort of we were seeing in the radar image matched up pretty well to some things that they had seen, sort of theorized, they were seen in 2D barotropic models. So, and sort of the thing that unites all that together is vorticity structure. What's going on with the vorticity structure in the storm? So I'm just going to return to this image for a second that I showed. And again, it's this time period here where all that interesting stuff seems to be happening in the eye wall, when you have this annular vorticity structure really starting to develop. So if we actually look at what this vorticity structure looks like here at 15 UTC, we have a structure that looks something like this. So this is just the relative vorticity at 15Z. So you can see, as I showed in the previous plot, that we have this eye wall maximum of vorticity. And then, really interestingly, there's a low reflectivity region and another significant bump out here in the vorticity profile. So the radial gradient of vorticity, or the radial profile, has very steep gradients on either side of the eye wall, and also another some gradients out here.
Isn't that Wayne's mode?
Yes. Yep.
That's Wayne's mode.
Indeed. No, well, this is not Wayne's mode. This is actually,
no, but
this is Wayne's mode, but not the mode he was talking about yesterday.
That isn't.
Well, no, because this is actually this is actually going to be a reflectivity mode, not a cloud-free mode. So it's
okay.
It's not the mode he was talking about. It's the mode he's talked about in previous work, but not the mode he was talking about yesterday in this case.
Okay, that was my guess.
But it is a low, it's going to be a low reflectivity region. It's a low vorticity and a low reflectivity region. So basically, since we have these steep gradients of vorticity on either side of the eye wall and actually on either side of this vorticity bump, I don't know if we're going to talk about both. Okay, so we have, on these gradients of vorticity, we can have the propagation of waves. And at least sort of the realization of two types of instability, which we'll come back to a little later to try to explain some of the structures we're seeing. But the propagation of waves. So this is my little cartoon of what is actually going on in Elena. We have a low vorticity eye, maximum vorticity in the eye wall, and then low vorticity out here in the far field. So along these steep gradients of vorticity on either side of the eye wall, we have the propagation of waves. And these waves are completely analogous to Rossby waves propagating on the Earth's vorticity, and thus were called vortex-Rossby waves. And these were first sort of talked about by McDonald, and then the term vortex-Rossby wave was coined by Mike, and then sort of a more generalized theory of them by Jim McWilliams. So we have these waves propagating on either side of the eye wall, which can cause problems, as Mike was talking about yesterday. So I'm going to show some math, even though I'm supposed to be the observation person. Sort of after Mike and members of his groups started exploring vortex Rossby waves, they derived the dispersion relationship for these sort of the vortex Rossby waves in a sort of an asymmetric balance model. So I just want to say something about the parameters in this equation before we move on to actually sort of see if this relates in any way to what we're seeing in Elena. So there's all these lovely terms that we can calculate in Elena, actually, from what we have in the reflectivity and also the flight level data. I think I'm going to think about that right now. We'll come back to this when we try to evaluate what's going on. But just in the sort of the main things that are going to be important here is the radial gradient of this formula, PV, and also the azimuthal wave number and radial wave number are going to be things that we'll talk about. But just in general, that, as we all know, these Rossby waves on the outer edge of the eye wall, which are propagating on a negative gradient of radial PV, are going to move around the storm cyclonically, but slower than the mean tangential wind. So everything in this equation is pretty much going to be positive, except for this radial gradient of PV, which can change. So if we're talking about waves on the outer edge of the vorticity gradient, since we have a negative radial gradient of PV, they're going to move slower than the mean tangential wind. And these waves are also going to propagate outward against the mean low-level wind. So as these waves propagate outward, these waves are vorticity structures. As they propagate outward, they've been found to initiate inner spiral rain bands in full-fill physics numerical models. Sort of we're talking about the work of Yu-Ching Wang and Yongshan Chen, which have shown that as these vorticity spirals propagate outward, that sort of the vertical motion associated with them can initiate inner spiral rain bands. But this is, up to this point, had not really been documented in observations. So if I'm paraphrasing you wrong here, Mike, please jump up and tell me I'm wrong. But sort of in this first paper about vortex Rossby waves, they state that with radar resolution of fine enough sort of time and spatial scales, you should see rain bands that have vortex Rossby wave characteristics. So you should see these features that are going to propagate outward with time and that are going to move around the storm. So when I read this, I thought about our Elena data and sort of all these really interesting structures we were seeing and thought, well, with 750 meter spatial resolution and 5 minute time resolution, if these inner spiral rain bands with sort of the characteristics of vortex Rossby waves exist, we should be able to see them in Elena. Now, the caveat here in the analysis I'm about to show you, ideally, if we were going to do this, we'd want to do it on a 3D sort of wind, a full field. You know, you'd want to be able to do this diagnosis on a full vorticity field or PV field. But in real data cases, we don't have that kind of data. The best that we have is the radar data with this kind of resolution. So ideally, this is not going to be the best way to try to isolate vortex Rossby waves, but we're going to do the best we can with the radar data. And since the vorticity structures seem to be well coupled to convection, we're going to try to see what we can get from that. So sort of in my time at NCAR, I've sort of moved over to the dark side and tried to do this similar type of analysis with a model, but I think we can get pretty far with the radar data and sort of matching up the convective features and sort of trying to make a connection to what they look like in the vorticity field. So what I'm going to show you now is sort of going to be an evolution of the radar data over about a 2 hour period. So what we have here, again, is the Apalachicola radar. This is going to be every 5 minutes. We have the hurricane core, 50 kilometers from center and 150 kilometers. The reflectivity scale is over here on the right. What you can see in these images, since they're snapshots, they're not actually time averages, you can see the location of the radar here in the white circle and some brown clutter around the radar. So this is at 1540 UTC. You can see, even at this time, a little hint of an elliptical eyewall. And what you're going to see as I step through this, is this elliptical eyewall is actually going to rotate cyclonically with time. Some features I'd like you to keep your eye on is this actually low reflectivity region here, outside the eyewall, and actually this band, which is just starting to form at this time. So these are sort of the features.
Where's the radar in this picture?
The radar is right here.
I wonder, the beam is pointing upwards, so that on this side, you're looking at things which are much higher up.
Right.
Than on this side.
Yes.
Is that much of a problem in this
case? Not if so much in this case, with the type of radar that's actually the WSR-57, that's not so much of a problem at these distances. But we also have satellite measures this time, so we know that this asymmetry is real. It fits with the direction of vertical wind shear, and that we actually have sort of independent measurements that this actually large asymmetry between north and south actually is real in this case.
What's the elevation angle, 0.75?
No, that's actually the resolution of this data.
Oh, okay.
The elevation angle in these cases is about 0.4 degrees. Because obviously here we're shooting over the water, so no need to worry so much about the ground clutter except right here at the coast. All right, so I'm going to step through this actually in 15-minute intervals, but you'll see the each 5-minute period go by here as we move forward in time. So 15 minutes later, you can see just sort of the hints of the elliptical eyewall. We have convection, enhanced convection at the ends of the ellipse, which has been shown in other studies. This rain band feature here is actually starting to intensify, and you can see this low reflectivity region that I mentioned before is also rotating around, actually in concert with our elliptical eyewall. So 15 minutes later, you can see why I mentioned this low reflectivity region. That's actually growing in scale or losing more reflectivity. The elliptical eyewall again, slightly rotated around, and here's our rain band, which is becoming more and more intense and more isolated as we have this low reflectivity region on either side. You can also notice at this time that the eye is actually filling in with low-level clouds. All right, 15 more minutes. Again, rain band. Very clear at this time, low reflectivity. Now we're talking almost zero reflectivity at this time. And here's our distinct elliptical eyewall. And this low reflectivity region here is actually now starting to impinge on the southern eyewall and erase sort of almost all traces of any kind of deep convection here from the southern eyewall.
And when you say it's filling in with clouds, I mean, that's those clouds, they must be precipitating. How can you get clouds? Recognize clouds at that distance.
Right.
When you're looking through all that. Mm-hmm.
Right. So these are sort of, we saw that in the radius height section that these are actually low topped, but you're right, they must be precipitating so that we get some sort of.
That's not very much it.
No, I mean, we're talking about like, you know,
S band or C band radar, so.
Yes, C band.
That much. And it will, you know.
Yeah, but it's,
well,
it's not. Not seeing shallow clouds.
No, but that 12 dBz isn't much rain. It's
mist.
Yeah, well, it would be the kind of light rain
or sea spray.
Okay. So, elliptical eyewall, low reflectivity regions, very distinct inner rain band. All right, so 15 more minutes is the image that I showed you before. We have this distinct north-south oriented elliptical eyewall, all convection, sort of restrained to the northern eyewall. You can see these really interesting sort of features that if you watch closely, you'll see that some of this stuff here in this sort of rain band region is actually propagating off the asymmetric convection from the eyewall. Here's our low reflectivity regions on either side of this very distinct rain band. There's another one out here, and there's actually another rain band that's coming off the image. And this is actually the maximum intensity, sort of the rain band in these other low reflectivity regions. So 15 more minutes, you can see that the band is actually, as we move forward, is going to start to weaken. It's actually going to split into a couple of different sections. And sort of this region here is going to start to fill back in with still sort of see the decline wall there. So as I mentioned, our rain band is now approaching about 80 kilometers from the center. It's starting to thin and to break into a couple of different sections, which continues during this time period. Here, you can see that the eye wall is starting to reestablish itself here to the south, and we're getting all sorts of funky shapes here on the inner edge of the eye wall. It sort of lost its elliptical shape, and I don't know what kind of shape you'd call that, actually. I want to point out, stop here, and notice this piece of reflectivity that's actually propagated off the eye wall. I think this is going to be the last section here. You can see that that sort of feature is now starting to take on a banded shape. And actually, what's going to happen is that this feature is going to propagate around and become another rain band, which I'll show you in a little bit. But you can see this is what's left of our previous rain band during this time. So to sort of interpret this evolution of a rain band and elliptical eye wall, there's a lot going on. Yeah?
Maybe, would you mind showing the whole loop?
Oh, sure. All right, so we'll start.
Just to give us kind of a review for us.
So we'll start back here at
15. The life cycle of this particular band.
Right, so we'll start back here at 1540. Here's actually what the feature that's sort of going to become the band. Again, low reflectivity region. And this, you're going to see a large asymmetry actually develop during this time as well. Here at the storm is, there is an asymmetry, but you can see it's going to look a lot more asymmetric as we move forward. So again, this elliptical eye wall, things are sort of watching for step forward in time. So. I can't, well, the animation didn't really want to work, and I wanted to stop it, so.
Right, just do it. Old-fashioned style.
That's right. So, that's the full loop.
Do it one more time, just for fun.
Okay. Everybody likes observation.
Yeah.
All right, whoops.
Okay. The next is fine, so I think that's it.
And as you step forward, you can really see that these things propagating off that northern eye wall.
This will be on this will be posted too, I guess.
Yes, I actually have an animation of a slightly longer time period, a different time period on my website.
So it almost looks like it's it gets convectively invigorated, it's becoming sheared, it's moving outward,
yes.
And it seems to slow down.
Yes, we're going to cover all the bases.
Okay.
In a minute. Yes. Okay, so that was the reflectivity loop. So now we want to try to, or what I want to do is try to interpret what we saw in terms of some of the results that were coming out of Mike's group and also some stuff that Wayne and Jim Costin did. So to do this and to sort of evaluate all of the parameters in that equation I showed you earlier, to sort of figure out what sort of were the dominant wave numbers in these sort of asymmetric features, the reflectivity data was Fourier decomposed into various mutual wave numbers. And this is the power, which is just the amplitude squared, averaged over this sort of inner rain band region. So we're averaging over this region here. And this is over 1310 to 2130 UTC. And the time period I actually just showed you is 1540 to 1740. So when you decompose the reflectivity data in its various wave number components, what obviously jumps out, so we have a break here in the vertical scale, is that wave number zero, the symmetric component of the reflectivity, is dominant at all time periods throughout this sort of, through all times this 12-hour period. And this is expected. We know that hurricanes are strong vortices to sort of a first estimate. They are symmetric. So you can see that that's borne out here in this image. We also have the sort of low wave number components of this region, wave numbers 1 through 4. And you can see that these wave numbers don't attain anything, the magnitude and the symmetric component. They're about a sixth to a fifth of the amplitude. And I guess first of all, I want to talk about wave number 1. So this is sort of the first asymmetric wave number we have in Elena. And so, oh, what happened there? Okay, so I'll talk about that in a second. But this is an azimuth time, so we have time going down. And now we have azimuth across the bottom, so south to north to south. And this is of the wave number 1 reflectivity, so the Fourier decomposed. This is the wave number component of the reflectivity, you can see that the wave number one is actually pretty steady in time. That there are some features that seem to be propagating through, but in general, we have the maximum amplitude in wave number one north of the center, or north-northwest of the center, and low to the south. And this is a reflection of the vertical wind shear. As I mentioned earlier, there should be an arrow here, which is going to show you that the shear in this case is from the west or west-northwest. Numerous studies have shown that updrafts are initiated on the down shear or slightly left of down shear of the vortex. These updrafts are going to raise and be sort of helically, they're going to rise and sort of be invected around the storm. So you have maximum reflectivity north of the center. We also have shear-induced up or downdrafts, up shear of the center, and as that sort of low reflectivity that's subsidizing the drying air sort of invected around the storm. So sort of lost pieces of my diagram here, but so the wave number one signal, this is pretty well known that this is a dominant vertical wind shear signal in the storm. But what we want to look at now are sort of these four peaks in wave number two. And especially interesting is because one of these peaks in wave number two is happening at the time period I just showed you. So what I'm going to show now is, again, these reflectivity images. These are only going to be every 15 minutes. Those are going to be the same as I showed you before on the left. And on the right is going to be the wave number two component of this reflectivity as we step forward in time. So, and as you'll see, there's not a lot going on at this time period. There's some amplitude in wave number one or wave number two in the outer regions. But as we step forward in time, you're going to see that where that maximum comes from. And it's going to be associated, actually, with this rain band and with the elliptical eyewall. So this is going to be every 15 minutes now, but we'll just step forward. So now at almost 1600, here's our rain band. And you can see it's starting to have a wave number two signal at this time. You can also see a reflection of the elliptical eyewall here inside the 50-kilometer radius. These signals are going to grow in time, along with the obviously the reflectivity of this storm. All right, I'm going to stop at this time period here. Now, obviously, here is our strong wave number two reflection of our rain band, but it might not be obvious this is actually a wave number two feature just by looking at the reflectivity, because we have all of this sort of shear forced vertical motion and convection here to the north of the storm. So this feature actually matches sort of up with this feature here, but it's sort of masked in the full reflectivity field by that strong wave number one signature. So it's a little bit more evidence here when we actually decompose the radar into its wave number components. You can see here's the elliptical eyewall with its sort of negative reflectivity images here and high at this time. This is actually the maximum amplitude at this time in both this outer and inner wave number two feature. So remember that, that's going to be important in a second. And you can see that they're also aligned radially at this time. As we move past this time, you'll notice the band propagating outward. You'll see the signature in wave number two start to thin and stop, as Mike mentioned before, and break into two, as I mentioned as well. So you can see now they're starting to actually separate. As we move forward in time, the amplitude is reducing. And broken in two. Your elliptical eyewall now, you've lost all sort of signature of that, so we've sort of broken into a higher wave number feature in the eye. And then by this time, you can actually see the highest amplitude in wave number two is associated with this feature here, which, as I sort of alluded to earlier, will actually become another rain band that we just saw. So, to try to explain what might be going on, I'm going to return to this sort of vorticity profile, and here's our mode. Talk about some of the instabilities that actually can be realized with such type of vorticity profiles. And this is after work that Jim Costin and Wayne did back in 2000. So here's our sort of relative vorticity profile. And there are sort of two types of barotropic instability, or two types of coupling that can go on between waves on either edge of these vorticity gradients. So type one instability, which is sort of the classic, sort of what Mike talked about yesterday, barotropic instability, would be between the positive and negative gradients on either side of the eyewall, or either side of this bump in vorticity outside of the core. Type two instability, if the moat is actually small enough, so that these gradients, this gradient on the eye wall and this outer vortices of the maximum are close enough together, waves can actually phase lock and grow between the negative eye wall gradient and this positive gradient on this ring of vortices state. So, as Mike had sort of drawn yesterday, you can imagine that in all these gradients, you have waves propagating. So if these waves...
This profile that you just showed,
yes.
Is that stable? Does it remain largely unchanged over the time scale?
This is at the beginning of that time period I just showed you. So this is sort of the vortices profile that the waves and the rain bands that I just showed you were propagating on. But it's not, this feature, as we saw in the radius time Hubmuller, is pretty constant with time, that you do keep this eye wall vortices maximum. This feature actually disappears after this time period.
So we forgot to make, if one's going to make an argument that this is a type 2 ability, which then initiates the band, which then propagates as a shared vortex Rossby wave, strictly speaking, you need the time scale of the mean vortex to be longer than the e-folding time scale of the instability.
Right.
You need a scale separation to make this argument irrational and systematic. Otherwise, it doesn't hold water, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's, we can sort that out.
Okay. So here are the two types of sort of instabilities that have been identified. So what do these things look like in sort of these 2D barotropic simulations that members of Wayne have done? So I stole this from Wayne's 99 paper on basically barotropic instability that develops where we have this ring of high PV or vorticity around the core, which looks very similar to what we have sort of in Elena during most time periods. It's this one sort of ring of convection. So this type 1 instability, or basically this instability across the radial gradients on either edge of the eye wall. What happens as you move forward in time is that in this case, you actually have a wave number 4 pattern. And the actual wave number, the wave number of maximum instability depends on the width of this ring here. But what happens is sort of Mike drew yesterday, is that the vorticity in the eye wall breaks down into a number of mesovortices. And these mesovortices actually cause asymmetric mixing between the eye and the eye wall. And then this figure will relax to a monopole at later times. But the features that are sort of of most interest now are sort of these vorticity filaments that show up from the corners sort of a square eye wall here, these mesovortices. So these mesovortices are going to mix the high eye wall vorticity into the eye and mix low vorticity air out. But also during this mixing process to conserve angular momentum, some high vorticity actually is mixed outward, which as it's propagating outward and is sheared by the angular velocity in the storm, you can see you get these vorticity filaments, which look a lot like Aspen rain bands. So this could be one cause of sort of what we're seeing happening in Elena. Since we saw that we had that eye wall, which was clear, fill in with some low or precipitating clouds, we also had an elliptical eye wall, which is sort of looks like a wave number 2 or 2 mesovortices. And we also had these repeated sort of instances of spiral rain bands. The type 2 instability, this is after Koss in 2000, we have a low vorticity in the eye, then a ring here in the center, and then another outer ring of high vorticity, which is sort of what we saw in that time period, that second rain band that I showed you. So in this case, wave number 2 was actually found to be the most likely manifestation of this type of instability. So as you start to develop this wave number 2 asymmetry with an elliptical eye wall, that sort of as the edges of the lips approach that strong vorticity outside the core, that this vorticity starts to be stripped off the outer edge, and actually as it enters this region of stronger rotation, actually rolls up into these sort of anticyclonic vortices here, so that you actually get a tripole with low, high, low vorticity structure, and also again these vorticity filaments outside the core. So this actually, when I read this actually looked quite similar to what we saw in Elena. at this time period. That, again, we're making this jump between vorticity and between radar reflectivity. And we actually had the full field, maybe this wouldn't exactly hold, but we're doing the best we can with the data that we have here. And so just to make some comparisons between these very simple barotropic experiments and what we see in ELENA, that perhaps we see a little bit of this tripole structure, and we do see these possible, at least reflectivity filaments, that could be vorticity filaments in the core here. And actually, I've done some work with Jim Costin in that if we put in this vorticity structure that I showed you in ELENA, that this sort of tripole structure is the end result. So we're hoping to write that up soon, Mike, so we can put a little bit more meat on the argument here. But this actually is the end state of this.
I don't understand how you're going to put more meat on the argument. You're going to do a numerical simulation?
Right. He's done a numerical simulation using the
ELENA. Full vertical structure with ELENA data kind of assimilated.
It's using the ELENA vorticity profile.
It's barotropic. Right. It's a barotropic simulation.
Right. Still a barotropic simulation.
Right.
I'm a little puzzled. Why should a barotropic simulation be so good with all the convection going on in the eyewalls and stuff? Why?
Well, one of the problems I think everyone wrestles with is that, all the classical theory of stabilities of this kind rely upon there being an invertible adiabatic invariant like potential vorticity. And vorticity certainly isn't anything close to an invariant, except maybe in the eyewall in some conditions. Even there, you want to use potential work.
Potential work.
And when you have a situation at the inner edge of the eyewall where the relevant adiabatic invariant, which is the moist potential vorticity, is relevant on one side and the dry is on the other, nobody knows how to do that problem. But outside the eyewall, I share your skepticism about whether vorticity is at all a relevant quantity for this sort of stability, because it's just so far from being a conserved property.
Also, I'm just making some. If you look at moisture and include moisture in stability calculations, Dave Schechter and I have a paper coming out of JAG.
Mm-hmm.
And moisture in this simple model, moisture tends to reduce the growth rates of the instabilities because the moisture actually helps provide an additional screening between the Rossby waves on the gradients. So moisture provides a low flow, it basically attenuates the Rossby gradients. So the
it reduces the moisture. The moist Rossby radius will shrink.
Yeah. Well,
that's usually not a big effect. That's
No. This is a very, we can demonstrate that it is a very big effect in this instability calculation. And when you make the vortex cloudy, then the instabilities get modified substantially. And so, you can argue with the simplicity of the model, fair enough. But when you include the cloudiness in the vortex, the instabilities can become significantly suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is echoing Carrie's comment, that which variable should you use to do the instability calculation, and whether should you include cloudiness? I think it's not justifiable to do barotropic models in the presence of a moisture which permeates these structures.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing,
one has to get away from barotropic models ultimately. One has
right.
to be playing around with barotropic models. Or provide a more rational argument for their perfect quality.
These high reflectivities here, are you associating those with positive vorticity?
Yes,
positive
high vorticity, right. And then this would
sort
of be
a regions of heavy rain, they might be regions of downdrafts. Or is that a long time?
If we've sort of done cross sections through these storms or through the bands, and actually there isn't a significant downdraft, but yes, that could.
I mean, if they're downdrafts, then there might be negative forces there on these.
I've looked at some structures similar to this in sort of full physics simulations, and they actually match up. They are regions of high forces, of relative forces.
Why the emphasis on instability as opposed to stochastic forces?
Well, that's right. So that's another thing that I was going to mention. That sort of since we haven't looked at this in enough detail to really say what if it's sort of a realization of instability. The other thing that is going on here is we have this, maybe not stochastic force, but we have this persistent forcing for asymmetric convection on the northern edge of the Yawa, which is going to induce a vorticity asymmetry. So the storm is trying to axisymmetrize this, that we would have the same type of sort of outward propagation of the.
So if that's the case, you don't necessarily need to invoke instability.
No, I don't know what the answer is. I'm just saying we don't know which one it is, because in this case.
These are shear disturbances in the waveguide of the,
exactly,
the vortex, and the shear disturbances are irreversibly,
right,
filamented to small scales.
Yes.
And
I was sort of
known that,
yeah,
for a long time, you know.
Yes, those are the two sort of arguments that I wanted to raise here today, is that we don't know which one it is, but just sort of to just give a general idea,
sure,
about these are the ways that you can interpret what's happening here.
But it may be neither. I think Isaac's point is that if you just have ordinary convection going on, it's out,
mm-hmm,
of the, we know all kinds of work that's been done, Richard Chino, so the convection in the shear environment tends to be quasi-2D, and if you look at the actual local shear vector,
mm-hmm,
it is more or less orthogonal to these bands. So a simple hypothesis that you can't obviously rule out, I think, is that you just have ordinary tropical convection with downdrafts and so,
mm-hmm,
on occurring in a strongly sheared environment, and that 2D alignment happens to have the spiral shape. And the vorticity follows from that,
right,
and the incidental quantity in that idea.
Which is one of the things we're sort of looking at now is,
well,
what,
yeah,
what is the sort of the wind structure of these features? Are they more sort of transverse? Are they sort of more tropical type MCS type circulations? Or
I'd be very surprised if that were the case.
It's not the case. Not in here. Out here,
dominating.
Yes.
I reject that hypothesis.
Out here,
yeah,
these outer rain bands actually do look more like that, but the ones in the inner core. Yeah.
So I think it seems like we've sort of moved into the question period. but it would be good if you had a concluding comment that you wanted,
right,
to make.
Well, Joe, do you want to add something?
So you can answer this after your conclusions or next. In your ventures into the dark side of numerical simulation, what do you see evolving in such structures in numerics?
Looking at sort of some of the high resolution dwarf simulations we've been doing, I haven't quite looked at some of the inner rain band structure, but looking at what's actually going on in the eye wall and some of the really cool structures we see in Katrina, that they actually look a lot like the barotropic simulations. So maybe that doesn't make everyone happy, but they look really quite similar. So it's we're still sort of doing some diagnosis on these sort of rain band features, but I'll sort of answer this, and we can see these are the other rain bands that I spoke of, and we can measure their phase speed, and I'll go this quick. We can use the equation, and if people want to know all the details of this, I have a paper that came out earlier this year that in trying to see if these things are vortex frost waves, or at least have the characteristics of them, they do have the propagation characteristics of vortex frost waves. They're moving cyclonically around the storm at about, what comes out of the equation is 26 meters per second. It actually moves at 23, so the propagation speeds look okay. This is actually the radius time. So you can see here are the four bands that are propagating outward with time. We can measure the phase speeds. As Mike sort of alluded to earlier, they sort of stop at a radius. There does seem to be evidence of a critical radius that's happening here in these cases. So basically, the main point is that these things look like vortex frost waves. They have the characteristics. They have a sort of a critical radius. They have the propagation speeds. Whether there's sort of some realization of instability or there's some result of some, again, as I said, this diabatically generated vorticity because we have that shear asymmetry, we don't know. And we're sort of looking at